a little while ago, I was talking to my youngest brother, and he was saying that he was listening to conservative talk radio to just see what those views were and just to kind of see what was going on with that. And it got me to thinking about what my own issues with conservative talk radio are, and I'm going to talk about that specifically, but this actually, the topic of today's conversation is much broader, so I'll put out an apology to conservative talk radio, because I'm not trying to point a finger at them specifically, but they sort of exemplified it and got me thinking about this subject again. And I realized, as I was considering this, what my personal issues were with that, that on a politically, there's not really an argument. People have different views politically, and that's just the way it is. That's fine. It doesn't really make that much difference spiritually what your political views are. But one of the things that happens on a number of those stations or broadcasts that I've listened to is a thing that where the people are implicitly or explicitly blaming their suffering on other people, blaming their suffering on external conditions, complaining about a situation going on with something else or someone else external to them, and pointing the finger for the responsibility for their suffering to that external situation. And this is, if you're of a kind of Marxist bent, this is kind of a tricky area. The Marxists, of course, say religion is the opiate of the masses, right? And what they're talking about is religion's propensity for telling people to be quiet, have faith, and don't doubt, as a way of deflecting responsibility from the abuses of power. And so right off the bat, you know, someone might say, well, I need to point out other people's faults in order to protect from this abuse of power. May or may not be true, I don't know. I don't want to take on that particular issue, except to say that internally, and this is really where the Buddha Dharma makes sense and where the Buddha Dharma has traction for us, is what happens with our own mind, what happens with the suffering in our own mind. And so the focus of the Buddha Dharma is internal. The focus of the Buddha Dharma is on what's going on in my mind, not what's happening external to me. My comments today have nothing to do with the rightness or wrongness of anybody's action. My comments today want to point to how we respond to suffering, how we respond to difficulty, whether it's internal difficulty or external difficulty, mainly external difficulty today. Early on in my practice, I was, you know, associated with a group and going to a group, and the teacher described the 10th precept, do not defame the three treasures, as being a kind of catch-all for everything else that wasn't included in the first 9 precepts. And that may be true, but in retrospect, I thought, that doesn't really capture that 10th precept. The 10th precept is do not defame the three treasures. It could also be reworded as do not blame the three treasures. And the commentary for that precept from Dogen is, to do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world, and the merit of doing such a thing becomes a source of all wisdom. Do not criticize, but accept everything. It's an interesting commentary and really points to our own internal responsibility for what's going on, our own internal responsibility for our own suffering or not suffering, our own internal responsibility to really follow Buddha nature, to really listen to and hear and follow the promptings of our own heart. When we begin to, and I see this in my own mind, this is a precept that I work on myself quite a bit. Oh, I should say, eventually that teacher had a falling out with his teacher and went off and, you know, is doing something else now. And to my mind, when I look back on it, reflect on a situation, it's complicated and all that stuff, but I kind of wonder how much of that was based on his misunderstanding of this precept. So I think that this precept is really important to understand because it can lead us away from that which actually helps us. And I think that's why it's phrased, do not defame the three treasures. It has that specific narrow thing about the three treasures, but it actually applies in quite a bit of different circumstances, whether it's the Sangha refuge of your job and employer, the Sangha refuge of your family, the teaching of your own experience, the teaching of the truth that you might encounter somewhere else. So it has this broader implication as well as that fairly narrow implication in terms of our relationship to the three treasures, actual three treasures. So what happens for myself is that something arises, a difficult situation arises, and it may well be caused by someone external to me. Someone may do something which is completely wrong or just plain daft or something like that. And my response is, oh my, you know, sort of my initial momentary response is, oh my God, how am I going to deal with that? And because I don't know what to do about it, the easy thing to do is to point the finger outside of myself. Point the finger and say, that situation should change. This morning, this is a little bit... Well, over the last while, we've noticed a pair of geese sitting, kind of living out on the pond. Oh, this is over the last 3 years. And they're an interesting pair of geese because one of them had an injured leg. And we think we first noticed him 3 years ago, and he was all kind of limping around and quite disabled, but seemed to survive, and then they went away and did whatever they do for the rest of the year. And then the next year we saw him again, and his leg was a little bit better, and he survived that year. That was pretty neat. And they were on the pond for a couple of months in the spring and then left again and then came back again this year. And I wasn't sure whether it was that same pair of geese until quite recently when the two of them, I knew that there were a pair of geese on the pond, but I wasn't seeing the limp so much. And then quite recently, I noticed that they had four little goslings, like a couple of days ago. Well, little.
Yeah, they're not little, very long.
They're not little, very long. So they were out feeding. And then this morning, I heard some kind of different kind of calls, and it woke me up. I was kind of half dozing and before my wake up time, and I heard this kind of call, like it had this kind of anguished quality to it that the geese don't normally have. And I wonder if something's happened out there. And so I went out, and it was kind of complicated on the pond. There was another pair of geese there, and then there were three. there were, and I wasn't sure what was going on, and maybe the babies had gotten eaten or something like that. And I was all agitated about this, and kind of concerned because I, you know, well, for complicated reasons, I suppose, but I don't want to assume, make the assumption that my agitation was based on anything more positive than my attachment to having the outcome of the geese live. But when I looked at it, there's other stuff there. There's also compassion and all that stuff for the suffering. So this kind of little drama is playing out. There's another pair of geese on the pond. The two are there. And then I noticed one of the pair that has the four little ones, and it was only three this morning, so maybe somebody did get eaten, was on the other side of the fence. And interestingly, the other day I was watching them, and I was thinking, they were kind of there, and I was thinking, I bet they really want to get onto the other side of the fence because the grass and stuff is a little higher over there. It's probably a little bit more, you know, more food over there. So one of the pairs on the other side of the fence, the four little ones are on this side of the fence. And then something else happened where the goose with the limp started kind of frantically going up and down the edge of the fence, making little calls, like, and the three little ones had disappeared, like maybe they had gone through the fence and were with the adult, and I thought they had just kind of gone off into someplace in the neighborhood. And this went on for a while, 10, 20 minutes, something like that. And finally, the goose with a limp took off and flew away. And not just over the fence, but actually flew completely away. So it was like everybody's disappeared. Very interesting. And I don't know whether they maybe just went across the road and went down into the creek and headed for the river or what was going on. My reason for bringing this up is, here is this, and I was trying to think, oh, is there anything I can do to go out there and help these geese? And realistically, just over the years, I've come to the point where I just don't think it's wise for me to get involved in the life of wild animals. It just doesn't seem to work. I've tried to rescue all kinds of birds and stuff like that, and it just doesn't seem to work. So basically, here's this distressing situation in which, in reflecting on it and being careful about it, and like say many years of thinking, there's nothing. It is apparent that there's nothing that I should do, and that it's wise to do nothing. And still, there's this distress that comes up. And the point that I'm trying to make for this morning's talk is that there's a part of my mind which could start to criticize the owners of the pond for having such a tightly controlled fence where the birds can't get back and forth between the outside and the inside. Or there's a part of me that could criticize people's cats that kind of go out and eat an enormous number of birds and start to complain about these various forces which brought about my, which in some sense I could think brought about my suffering this morning. And that would be the way that I would, one of the ways that I could take myself out of my experience and focus on an external source of suffering, rather than having to sit still in the uncomfortableness of not being able to do anything and to just accept the suffering of the geese. I mean, it was kind of heartrending to me to hear that goose with the limp on this side of the fence kind of honking and kind of saying, where are you? Where did everybody go? You know, this is the kind, and anyway, it was hard. Small drama for the morning. And really, the only thing that I can do with that is to just sit still in it. And part of my training, my mind, will be to take apart the feelings that I have and see what it is. You know, oh yeah, part of it is my attachment to, like I say, having family relations evolve in the kind of normally positive way that they do. The geese grow up and go off and, you know, live happily ever after, or whatever. And you know, and there is a part of me that really wants that to happen. Where that comes from is possibly suspect, but I don't want to be too, I'm not going to be too hard on myself, because in a way that's also criticizing my own self. Part of it is just the compassion that arises and when suffering, when there's suffering, and the wish to, the wish that beings not suffer, and the recognition of how beings suffer. And that, that sitting still in that place is painful. It's difficult for me. Maybe for someone else it isn't, but for me it is. And so in terms of training, rather than going into this criticism mode, I'm going to turn within and sit still in whatever is arising. And maybe there will be something that, that can be done from that place. Maybe there won't be something that's able to be done from that place. But that in itself is a positive thing to do. I'm not giving into my own criticism, my own judgmentalism about external circumstances. And I'm also then able to offer merit for those beings. And I don't think that that is a... But I think that that is quite a positive offering as well. So, in terms of human beings and our interaction with human beings, the human world, things are more complicated because people are, you know, we have much more, there's not, in a sense, there's not a fence separating me from action with regard to the human world. And sometimes it is our responsibility to point out wrongdoing, to alert authorities about mistakes being made, or to take steps on our own. Sometimes it is necessary for us to do things about what's going on in the world. The important thing, the thing about this precept, is that we really examine our own motivation and to be clear-eyed about our own motivation for doing this. If there is that sense of complaint, oh, I wish this shouldn't be happening and these people are dumb and bad because they're doing this, or that sense of blame, then we're much more likely to do something clear-eyed and positive from the impulse to do, take steps. Part of the practice of training, part of our practice is coming to recognize, coming to encounter the possibility of an error in our own thinking and behavior, and being willing to do sort of the opposite of that thing. So with regard to not defaming the three treasures or not criticizing or blaming external circumstances, if we're a person who may have varying degrees of action, may have the habit of varying degrees of action based on this kind of externalized blame, we may actually need to pull back from that and not do anything. And that may mean someone's messing up the cups at the water cooler, and that's wrong, and we need to take steps to correct that. We may actually, in working on this problem, we may actually have to say, I'm going to not do anything here, even if it means that the cups at the water cooler are messed up. I'm going to refrain from acting, I'm going to refrain from criticizing, as a way of training our minds. And again, this is where the Marxists might be saying, wait, you're just telling us not to do anything. No, what I'm trying to point out is that this habit of blaming and criticizing is really addictive. It's a really addictive habit. And this is particularly apparent with, if you ever knew anybody who listened to talk radio, this kind of habit, and that's, again, I'm not trying to vilify them, but just to kind of point this out, this kind of habit of criticizing and blaming in our own minds is really addictive. And it appears to satisfy something, but in fact it doesn't actually satisfy anything and is only endlessly self-perpetuating. So in order to break that addiction, you need to be able to be willing to say, no, not going to go there. I should say that with the internet and all, and again, I'm a real big believer in the internet and everything, that there is an equal danger of pursuing this vein of thinking on some of the comments and forums and stuff that you might encounter, where criticism becomes a thing of its own. And so if you just need to be aware that criticism and blame is really quite corrosive in terms of our own mind and our own capacity to not suffer. So again, I'm not trying to say don't do what's responsible, don't take steps when needed, but I am trying to point out that we can do those things, we can take steps when there's suffering that needs to be addressed from a different place than the mind of criticism and the mind of blame. And in the process of learning how we might be addicted to criticism and blame, we may actually need to pull back from it for a while and refrain from acting until we have a clearer view of our own propensity for this particular problem. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. So I think that's really what I wanted to say. As with all the precepts, the precept against defaming the three treasures is quite big and potentially has different facets of how it can be misused or how it can be better understood. This is my particular take on it at this point. It's definitely not the definitive take, so please consider it yourself in the future. But it seemed worthwhile, bringing it up and talking about it. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
I can really relate when you were talking about, especially that you mentioned about the internet as well, because I just recently, I think about a day or two ago, me and some different friends share quotes back and forth, and I had something occur to me, and I put on there, and of course other people can see it too, and someone just kind of posted they weren't being really negative about it, they were just being kind of awkward, a completely different view from what I had posted, and they had kind of a criticism, and in my mind I was thinking, you completely missed the point of what I said, and I almost started to get a little annoyed with this person, and I said, you know, I should just go on here and just blast their argument just right out of the ocean. And it was really hard, but I felt like, I looked and I said, this is a problem. I'm feeling compelled to respond to someone's criticism all the time. And I looked, I said, if I do this, is this really going to do any good? Is it going to do any good for me? Is this really going to do any good for the person I'm talking to? And it was really, really hard. And it keeps coming back to me sometimes. And even today, it came to me again this morning. I was like, I could have said this. but I haven't. I haven't gone, because I didn't feel like I should. I felt like I was... kind of like you were saying, like I need to step back and, you know, refrain from that. Even if it just means to train my own mind to not be controlled by those things and whatnot. So,
yeah, that's a really good example of what I'm talking about. And it's also a really good example of how addictive it is and why it's addictive. Because we're kind of trying to defend ourselves, you know, and... there's a lot of energy in that. And again, I'm not trying to say, you know, never say anything, but just really look at that and really look and see what all those dynamics are and be willing to step back from it and is this really going to be helpful for me to say something? You know, somebody may say something quite quite critical. I was reading one particular forum where somebody was talking, and somebody had something completely off the wall to say about a third party in this, really vitriolic and quite off the wall. And I thought it was really neat. It was actually some Zen teachers who were talking. This Zen teacher from the Midwest came on, and he didn't directly address the issue, but he said some stuff which sort of brought the conversation back to a place where it could just highlight the kind of weirdness of that particular post.
Yeah.
It was quite skillful. I was really impressed with it. And so if you read just that one thing out of context, you might think, oh, wow, the person that they're talking about must be really awful. But if you read it in the context of this whole list of things, which most people would do, then you would see, wow, the person who wrote this post is really off the wall. You see what I'm saying? So there's varying things that you can do depending on how well you've let go of the impulse to defend self, basically.
And that's important when it's coming from self, we're likely to cause problems. And when it comes from, how can I help this person? That's closer to the possibility of being able to cease from evil, do good, and do good for others. So, you know, when we find ourselves upset and agitated and angry and wanting to convince and wanting to be understood, all these things, it's helpful if that can raise a red flag. But if it's coming up, you know, the way you might treat a child who's made a mistake and you want to help the child rather than defend yourself so that the child won't break your plates again or whatever, if that makes any sense, then it might be, it's more likely to be helpful. It's more likely to create merit and less suffering in the long run.
Susan, did you?
No, I was just, I'm so grateful that you brought this up today, because I like last night in bed, I was thinking about the 10 precepts and trying to keep them. the 10th one I didn't quite understand, and I have a better understanding of it now. I need to understand it more. I'm going to look into it more. But it's just, is it coincidence that you had the very one? I was like trying to understand it, and even I couldn't even really recite it in my head, much less understand it. So I was like, thank you. I think that was very timely for me.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, thank you. Somehow it was coming up. It comes up periodically because it's one of the ways that Buddhism is radically different than other religious traditions, and particularly other religious traditions in the West. And this is that its focus, the focus of the Dharma, is on what goes on in your own mind and how you respond to the world, how you respond to what comes to you. That is really the focus of the Dharma, and it really has nothing, in one sense, to do with the what's going on outside of you. We still always need to be responding from the precepts. Now, that said, it does have the potential for radical change in society. If everybody is taking personal responsibility for themselves, then you can imagine that that is going to produce quite a different society than in one in which everybody is blaming everybody else for what's going wrong with them. So, in that respect, I think it's just an important precept to kind of come back to and to talk about again and again, how, or an area that we need to talk about again and again, how we are individually responsible for our own suffering. And it's very hard to bear in a certain way, particularly if we find ourselves in a situation where people are being bloody, well, anyway, are being oppressive or difficult or problematic or whatever. Or so we're responsible for ourselves, and this does not preclude the possibility of positive action to help others, because again, that's one of the things that may well arise from our action. I'm not saying everybody's responsible for themselves, so no social programs, no helping people, nothing like that. It's every man for himself. That's not what I'm talking about at all. What I'm talking about is internally developing the responsibility for our own suffering, for dealing with our own suffering, and learning compassion.
I see something about the small example you gave with the cups. I think if I had seen that situation where things were disarray because someone else didn't think to, maybe they were absentmindedly and left it that way, and I think about, I gotta just straighten them up. I'm not gonna criticize that person or whoever that may have happened, but I would suffer if I walked away from it and didn't do something for the next person to make it easier, have them organized.
Sure.
And I wouldn't, for me, I could not do anything. So I think in some of those situations where you hear criticism or, you know, inactivity, and that's just apathy and what you do, I'm like, I'm thinking, well, what can I do? If I can't do anything, then I will do nothing. But if there's one little thing I can do, then I will do it, because if I don't, I'll feel some suffering. And then maybe I have to look at that. Do I feel like I have to do everything? Or not everything, but do something, or blame myself if I don't?
That's exactly what I'm talking about, that when we sit still with a thing and are not blaming and criticizing, something may well arise for us to do. And we need to respond to that. You know, that's what I'm talking about listening to Buddha nature and listening to our conscience and deeper self and taking responsibility for that. So sometimes somebody may do something awful or something external to us, and it may be completely wrong what they did. And that, and part of our difficulty with it is it will make us have to do more work. Fair enough, okay. You know, there it is. That's what's come to me. My lot is to maybe have to do more work because of that. And to in a sense, be happy about that. Like, oh, there is something I can do. Because like I was talking about with the ducks, you know, man, it really bothered me. I couldn't really do anything to help those ducks. But there it is. That's the way it is. But if there is something to do, then I feel, you know, there's, oh, that's great. There is something I can do. That makes sense.
I think the intent of whoever is doing that thing that we're criticizing, I think for me, I've learned to accept the fact that I don't see the whole big picture. Maybe their intent, maybe they had to run away from that situation quickly. They didn't have time to leave it as they found it for whatever reason. I've learned for me not to think that I know everything well enough to know why this situation is what it is. I'm not big enough to see everything around it and to understand it. So that has given me some solace, just to say, well, I don't understand it. I don't know. I can't criticize the situations I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of merit in just being, having a bit of humility about our own capacity and to recognize the sort of hubris and pride in criticizing a situation which we don't really know all the facets of.
I certainly find that I make this mistake, but I think I have a strong idea of how things should be. Now, you know, I see like the thing with the dog that just shouldn't, you know, I would think that just shouldn't happen, or I kind of think that if I'm nice and compassionate and empathetic people, then everyone should be the same way to me. But then I find that I focus too much on what everyone else is doing and stuff really that's just totally out of my control. Like I habitually read the news and get really upset about what's going on in North Korea and Ukraine, and I think it's certainly something worth paying attention to. But if not taking personal action on it, then you shouldn't just sit there and watch it and then get upset about it at the same time. So I find a lot of times I get bent out of shape at looking at how I think things should be and what other people should do totally independent of me, when really I should just focus on what I'm doing and make sure that what I'm doing is something that I think I should be doing.
Yeah, it's, it can be helpful to really sit still in, you know, should is one of those, you have to be aware, should is one of those trigger words.
Yeah.
It'll get the monks kind of saying, oh, no, so I don't mean to do that to you, but part of the thing, what I'm trying to point out is, in should is another one of those ideals. This is the way it should be, and so then I should instead do this. What I'm trying to get at is what my approach might be to sit still in your upsetness about it. You know, sit still in why you're getting all bent out of shape about what's going on in Ukraine or whatever. Look at that and see what is going on there. I mean, maybe, I think I heard a story about somebody who, oh well, I'm sure, anyway, I can't remember the specifics of it, so I won't bring that up, but it may be that you're getting upset about something that's going on in the Ukraine, and at the nub of that upsetness, there is something that you should do, that, I mean, and should in the sense of, it would be good for you to do. And so, but it may not be, and it probably isn't. What you're saying is completely valid. What I'm trying to get at is sit still in it and try not to have ideals about what you should or shouldn't do, and just listen and see clearly, try to see clearly how to let things go and how to act positively. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely good to look and see what you can do if there is something.
Yeah, yeah. And who knows, maybe, like I'm saying, what I'm trying to imply is, maybe, and I don't really know if this is true for you, maybe there's some, you know, some organic reason that you ought to get into political science and go to Ukraine and help them, you know. Probably not, but...
At the very least, I think telling people about it, making sure that people are aware that it's happening, what's going on, is the first thing I think to do.
If that seems good, and again, I'm not really trying to advocate either doing or not doing any particular thing, but more the sitting still and letting go of ideals about how your mind ought to
right.
look, if that makes sense. Okay, well, thank you, and
thank you.
Hope your day goes well.